Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm spending the entire show talking about a play that is currently playing at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. This is still playing off-Broadway, but having seen this show, I can tell you that they can't be doing a better job than the cast currently at FST is doing. So in addition to a review by Sharon Leslie of the show, I am playing an interview with one of the four characters who plays all of the characters in the show, Gil Brady. Gil's story is really interesting because it's the story of a man who, for whom many, many things came very, very easily. You'll hear Gil talk a little bit about what it's like to be the baby boy in a family, and that, of course, is a favored position. And he could dance and sing and draw and act pretty, pretty easily. And then he had to confront the realities of a real training in a real university and a real and really difficult career. But Gil found hidden strength. Strength to do what he came to know was his path. And he has embraced it with all of his not only prestigious talent, but energy. It's a lovely interview. Stay tuned. Hang on. Here come the show. Is all about finding those parts of yourself which for one reason or another you had to hide, and you hid it so good that you forgot you had it, and now when you might need it in your life, you don't know that you already have it. Now, for most of my shows, well, for many of my shows, I spend the first part of the show talking about why this is so, how this happened, why it's important to try and recover those hidden parts, why it's difficult to do that, and how you can go about it. I also do a series of interviews called Anatomy of an Artist, in which I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do this because, as you will hear in the interview I'm playing today, people who make their living or their life with an art, and the person I'm interviewing today is an actor, that's his art, well, that is who they really are. You will hear in Gil's story how difficult it can be to be an artist in this culture, to be an actor specifically in this culture. And yet, as he says, he just knew that was what he was, who he was, what he had to do, and it was worth the sacrifices, the difficulties, the struggle, the insecurity. And that is true, I believe, of all of us, that being who we really are is not easy. There's almost always other people who don't think that's a good thing for us to be, whatever it is. And so there are sacrifices and difficulties and obstacles. But as with being an actor, the payoff for enduring the difficulty is so well worth the price. So in today's show, I'm interviewing Gil Brady, who is just delightful. He's not only a wonderful actor, and I was privileged to see the show he's appearing in, I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change, which has been extended at Florida Studio Theater. So if you live in Sarasota or Bradenton or Venice or even across the coast in Palm Beach or Miami, or you happen to be visiting Florida on vacation and you want a real treat, call up Florida Studio Theater, and you can even say Lynn told you to call, and go see Gil and his fellow cast mates in I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change, which is still playing off-Broadway. I didn't see the off-Broadway performance, but I am quite sure they cannot be any better than Gil and the rest of this cast. I probably shouldn't be talking that much about the show, because when I stop talking, I'm going to play Sharon Leslie's review of the play. Sharon is really a reviewer. I am just an audience. So you can hear her review in a little while. And after the interview, we're going to go out of this show with a song from the original cast album, so you can get some idea of what that feels like. Also, there's a photograph on my website of the cast. You can see Gil. He's the guy with the dark hair. And my website. Time to tell you about my website. My website is thelynshow.com. Clever, huh? thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, because if you do, you won't get me. You'll get somebody else. And on the website, you can do lots of things. You can see the pictures, and maybe I'll even put up some more songs from this show. You can also hear podcasts of my other shows, and they go back 3 years. So if you're interested in the whole area of why people hide aspects of themselves, what that's about, why it's a good idea to recapture them, how to do it, what the obstacles to that are, I talked a lot about that in many, many of the shows, and there are little blurbs telling you what the shows cover, who I interviewed, and what I'm talking about, so you can hear those podcasts there. Also, I wrote a book called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, and you can find out about the book and about my psychotherapy practice. Oh, more than you ever wanted to know about Lynn, you can find on my website. But now, I think I'm going to try and remember if there's anything else I need to say. I don't always get everything said. So now I'm simply going to hand the mic, metaphorically speaking, to Sharon Leslie, who does my reviews most of the time. And Sharon's going to tell you about I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change. And directly after that is the interview with Gil Brady.
Hi, this is Sharon Leslie with a theater review for The Lynn Show. I go to theater a lot. Musicals are my métier, and it's fun to see different approaches writers and directors bring to this marvelous performing art form. Playing at the Florida Studio Theater is I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change, a musical that is still enjoying a long run off-Broadway. I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change is an example of how the music video generation has morphed that frenetic film pace into a modern musical for the stage that is both visually stimulating and sexually charged. I call it a modern musical because lyrically the songs are all about how life is lived today, from dating through marriage, with some bouts of infidelity. While the subject is as old as Adam and Eve, every generation lives out the old battle of the sexes differently. I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change is a twist on a song lyric from Guys and Dolls. Marry the man today and change his ways tomorrow. The piece is put together in a way similar to Cats, more musical review than story, but it has a logical progression of how two people meet, fall in and out of love, and find a way to live a life together, including a funny song about making time for one another despite the responsibilities of children. The songs are staged with endless motion. You cannot get bored watching this show. Frequent costume changes by the four excellent performers makes the production a visual treat. The music is mostly upbeat, the lyrics clever and funny, and the piece entertaining, like a modern Noel Coward comment on society. But these characters are regular people, not the British upper crust that Noel Coward frequented in his works. And all of the storytelling is carried off by only two women and two men. These performers must have vocal and acting range to carry off the material. And they do. All four are attractive, fine singers, appealing actors, and equally balanced. Not an easy task. Their energy is envious. The direction is stunning, the set evocative of modern urban settings, and the lighting is artful. The music is funny and touching, also not easy to achieve. I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change is a delightful way to spend an evening at the theater watching your friends. I say that because we can all relate one of these characters to someone we know. I mean, those characters on the stage can't possibly be me. Anyway, it's a delightful way to spend the evening at the theater watching your friends living out their soap opera life on stage.
Okay, so I'm here with Gil Brady in the tiny Studio B at FST. And Gil is here appearing in I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change.
Ooh!
Yay! Okay, so I do this internet radio show, and I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
And I ask them the same question, and that is, how did it happen? How did it find you? How did it get started?
Well, I was just having this conversation with the adult acting class that I'm teaching here on Monday nights. I guess it depends on what you believe. I happen to believe that, you know, the things that we do in life, in a lot of ways are chosen for us, and then there's other things that we have control over. But it just, for me, it was just so obvious, as I hear from a lot of actors and a lot of my friends who are doing this professionally. They think that there was a moment where it just sort of made sense. And I feel the same way. And it wasn't, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that, oh, well, you know, I was 2 years old and I was singing and dancing for my parents and all that. I mean, we all, my brothers and sisters and I, were all entertainers, but...
So you were 2 years old and singing and dancing for your parents?
Oh, well, we were being kids. I mean, we're just, you know, that was...
Yeah, it's okay, but you were, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and it was
fun.
But
it wasn't. Of course. I just never thought, you know, this is something that I can, you know, ultimately do with my life or make a living out of. In fact, I can recall the first time, I can very, very clearly remember the first time that somebody told me that what would happen on the television, with the exception of the news, was fake, was artificial.
Oh, because you thought it was real.
Oh, I thought sitcoms were real. I thought, you know, I was...
How old were you?
Five,
uh-huh.
Six, maybe.
Uh-huh.
And I was devastated. I mean, I was absolutely devastated.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And I was angry with the people. I mean, I can honestly remember thinking, well, what a sham. I mean, this is awful. And then as I got a little older, I realized that that was okay. And
well,
that
wait. This is really interesting to me because what made you angry was that you had been taken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely.
That you believed it and that you cared and that it wasn't real.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but I guess I started to see the beauty in that, you know, and that it was okay,
yeah,
you know,
right.
That some stuff I didn't want to be real, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You know, when you have older brothers and sisters, I mean, they got into a horror movie kick at one point, and I was very thankful that all that wasn't real, because it used to traumatize me.
How many brothers and sisters?
She's one brother and two sisters.
Older?
All older. I am the baby.
Ah.
Obviously.
Baby boy.
Yes, as my mother will tell you. So I was... It took me probably until... You know, I mean, I did a talent show at school when I was 10 and then 11 and placed second both years. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, this is fun, but...
Singing and dancing.
Do this. Yeah, singing and dancing.
Okay, wait. What would your mother tell you?
Well, my mother is a frustrated actress herself. And my father's a psychologist, so...
That's an
interesting combination, yeah. I think that's another reason why I am what I am. I'm fascinated by human behavior, and I have a crazy mother. So it just sort of was the perfect storm to build an actor.
Well, the other thing that seems to me is, I mean, maybe I'm making this up, so you'll have to correct me, but, you know, the whole idea that one can create something that is fake, that will have an impact on people as though it is real,
mm-hmm.
Not everybody sees that. I mean, not every kid has that as a perspective.
Yeah.
But that is actually what you do.
It's exactly what I do.
That's right.
It's exactly what... Now, I can't think of it that way. And that's something that I sort of learned in college. I mean, I can't ever approach it with this feeling of, like, you know, well, it's just pretending, so I don't have to really work at it. You know, I don't have to really give that much. I think the best actors give a piece of their soul every time.
Quite the opposite. The only way to have an impact is for you to be behaving as though it's real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's an interesting dichotomy, isn't it? I mean, that it is both real and unreal at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Isn't it weird?
It's so weird. It's a real hard, it seems to me, a really, really hard reality to hold on to.
Yeah, but that can be a good thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said before, there's some things that you don't want to hold on to.
Right.
This time last year, I was doing a show in Atlanta called The Woman in Black, and it was a horror show again, and I had to be petrified every night, and it really does start to, you know, color other parts of your life, and, you know, you have trouble sleeping, and, you know, I was terrified of this woman in black at night. You know, if you woke up in the middle of the night, I was convinced that the woman was there, you know, and the whole show's about this curse, and at the end you find out that, like, if you've seen the woman in black, then your firstborn is going to be killed, and it's really, you know, very disturbing. But that was the one kind of show that, you know, or with any, I mean, I did The Crucible next, with any really dramatic show where you just have to kind of put your guts on the stage, you're kind of happy to leave it behind at the end of the night. And I think that's why, you know, especially with this cast, I mean, we're working our butts off. So at the end of every show, you know, we go and we, you
hang
know,
out.
Have a glass of wine and
right.
watch The Golden Girls. I mean, it's like,
right.
you know, we need to completely just distance ourselves from what's just happened, you know, whether it be... comedic, dramatic, what have you, because we have to
invest so much.
You've got to invest.
You have to invest so much. I think that is really something that people don't understand about actors.
Yeah.
I think they do think that you're playing.
Yes, many of them, I think. Yeah.
Right.
And, and that's unfortunate. I really do think that.
I think so. Well, it's an interesting problem, isn't it? Because on the one hand, it's such a compliment to you that it doesn't look like it's hard.
Right, right.
You know, that it doesn't look like you're working.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and I love that. And I love when people say, you know, they'll come up to you after a show and say, how'd you memorize all those lines?
Okay, well,
if it looked that easy, then great. But, you know, then the first, you know, bad review comes out, or mixed review or what have you, and you got a critic saying, you know, Gil Brady didn't sound good on his song. And I'm like, you know, do you know how difficult that song is? You know,
yes.
You know, if it's a dramatic role and they say, you know, I can remember this show that I was just talking about. I mean, to literally have to go through that traumatic experience every night and be petrified every night, and then have the Atlanta critics say, he seemed a little stiff in one part. And it's like, that's all, I mean, it's a two-man show. I've got a 10-minute monologue that starts out at the beginning of the show. I've got to do a British accent. I've got to be crying my eyes out at the end of the play. And all you got was that in one scene I looked a little stiff.
Yeah. But I really do think that's the point, is that we don't, as a general rule, audience, and that would mean reviewers too, unless they also actually worked.
Sure.
They don't get it.
Yeah, they just don't.
They absolutely don't get it, and so they can be cavalier.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, that's really, it makes it, I mean, as if acting wasn't hard enough.
Yeah.
You know? No, seriously.
Yeah.
Okay, so back up with me because I got ahead of myself.
Oh, sure, that's okay.
No. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. All right. So you're 10. And you're in, you know, you're playing.
I'm playing. I'm thinking, right. I have some, you know, facility with this, but I don't see it happening as a life choice. In fact, I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be a visual artist, and I was very, very good at the time, at just sketching and drawing and painting and stuff. And, you know, there's even less money in that, so my parents, of course, weren't thrilled. But the strangest thing happened. I moved when I was 11. My family moved to another town. And I had to start all over with a new friend. It was seventh grade. I mean, it was the worst time you could possibly do it. And I remember going downstairs to my art table one afternoon and sitting down with my colored pencils and just sitting there for about an hour. And I could not think of anything to draw. And what was worse is I didn't care. It wasn't about, oh God, I got to think of something. It was just like, I think I'm done with this. And within 6 months, my mom had signed me up for my first acting class to make friends in the new school.
Oh, God.
And I would say within a year, I probably realized, A, I like this a lot, and B, I think I'm, this is such a typical arrogant actor statement, I think I'm better than a lot of the other people. You know,
I don't think that. I think if you don't have that, you can't do
it. You can't do it.
Right.
It didn't feel arrogant at the time. It really didn't feel like...
No, it felt...
It just accurate. Felt... I liken it to if you've ever played a sport or a team sport, and you're losing and you're on the bench, you get this feeling in your gut of just, coach, put me out there. I know how to do this. Just, I don't know how I know how to do this, but I know I can score the goal. And that's how I was in acting class. I always used to, I'd watch other people and I'd say, can I just go up and do this? I think I know how to do this. And I'd want to jump up there every time. And I think that's, it just snowballed. And then I went to... I did every show I possibly could in high school, and then I went to a Stage Door Manor, which is a theater camp in upstate New York, which is...
Okay, stop.
Do you know it?
No, I don't. No, I want to back up.
Oh, go ahead.
Two things about your mother.
That's all? Oh, we get a whole sentence on my mother.
Well, when I said, you know, you were the baby boy, you said, yeah, that's what my mother would say, or my mother would say that. So did she...
Yeah.
Did she...
Oh, I'm the favorite. Okay.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's what I was...
Oh, my brother and sisters will tell you.
Everybody knows. Right. Okay. Right. So do you think there was an hidden agenda in choosing acting class as the place for you to make friends, or you think there really was just an accident?
That's a great question. I never thought of that. I think one of the facts that I left out was that my mother was also starting afresh in this new town, and so... We were at church one day and saw that they were doing a church play. And I kind of looked at each other and said, well, you know, we're both having a tough time adjusting here, so let's do this. And we, you know, summoned up our courage and walked down into the basement of the church and auditioned, and it was like the whole thing just sort of exploded. So the class did kind of seem like the next logical step, because we were having so much fun doing this church show and making all these friends. And but I think, and the director of that was also the teacher of the acting class, so it wasn't that weird a transition. But yeah, I think that, you know, I think part of her wanted for all of us. And I think my sister is a music teacher and plays piano. My brother has a better voice than I do. He did community theater for years. He's just smarter, so now he does computers and actually, you know, has health insurance and stuff. But he's, you know, really, I think there was definitely that feeling of, I want my children to be well-rounded, and I definitely want them to appreciate the arts. Yeah.
Right. And so she got at least one actor.
She got at least one, yeah, for better or for worse, yeah.
Right. Okay, so all right, so then from about 13 on, we have this as a serious choice, right? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And you're saying, essentially, I would like to do this as a career, or you're not.
Yeah, I would say around 13 or so is when, you know, is when the sports started to become less important. You know, I had less time for them and less energy, and the theater and the singing and all that just sort of was making more sense. And it wasn't just, again, not to blow my own horn, but people were sort of steering me.
Right.
You know, people were like, oh, you can sing, you should do this.
Right. Nobody was saying, you know, what are you thinking of, you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, it was logical. It was, well, Gil seems like he's good at this.
It shows you.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, it was natural. So, and I didn't ask, but I will now. And where was your father in all this? He just said, okay, fine, whatever, whatever?
He's the most amazing supportive guy in the world, yeah. Yeah, he's been wonderful. He's also he's just a really groovy guy. I mean, he loves the arts. He loves going.
Well, he married your mother.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
He's very understanding.
Yes. All right. Good. All right. Good. Yeah. So now you get out of high school and.
Yeah. Did a show with a gal who was a year older than me. She came back my senior year of high school for her Thanksgiving break and said, "You have to apply to Syracuse University." And it's the place for you. And I knew nothing about it, you know, nor anything. I didn't know anything about any college program. I just knew that I was supposed to go to college for this. Yeah, auditioned and got in. And
so there's a lot of help along the way. There's a lot of pointing you in this direction, this person taking you over here, this person saying do that.
It's sort
a lot
of just
of that.
Attracted
right.
the right people and the right,
right
circumstances.
Right. Not a lot of stuff that you had to initiate because
which is good as the baby of the family, you know.
Yes.
I'm used to having everything done for me, so this just made, you know, it was like,
actually I think that's the truth. I know there's a little tongue in cheek there, but I think it really is the truth.
I really do.
Not only that, I think that once you have that that life experience, life does do that for you.
I agree.
Mean, it's, you know, it's a combination of you expecting it and
and then it just sort of
shows up right. And so good. Okay, so you went to Syracuse.
I did.
And?
I kind of hated it for a while.
Oh, good. Why?
I kind of hated it.
Oh, is this big fish in a small pond, small fish in a big pond?
Well, yeah, there was definitely that. But I wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what happened more was that you combine a department. I mean, when you go to the next level of competitiveness and of seriousness in this profession, you get a very different demographic. I think you get people who are, we used to talk about it in class, it's not about anymore, oh, this is fun, or let me win the talent show. This is, who's the best, who's going to make a living, who's going to get the awards, who's going, you know. The switch is subtle, but it's also severe.
Yeah, it's who's going to win.
Yeah, this feeling of, you know, it's not anymore about, am I going to get the lead in the school play? It's, am I going to work and be able to, you know, eat and have health insurance and all, you know, the seriousness really, really ramped us up a few notches. So.
Oh, and this is particularly interesting, I think, for the baby boy.
Yeah, that all of a sudden it's not playtime anymore.
No,
yeah.
and it's not everybody around me wants to help me with this. It's that everybody around me is trying to beat me out of it.
It's trying to beat me out of it.
Right.
You know, and you've got, with a lot of college programs, you've got a lot of faculty who are not about coddling anymore. It's more kicking
right.
your ass.
Right,
you know.
Right, and that's what they think their job is.
Can I say ass, by the way?
Yeah, absolutely, ass is fine. So, yes. Well, so this is a challenge then for you that it wouldn't necessarily be for the oldest child in the family.
Yes.
You're used to, right?
I think
right.
so, yeah.
So, good for you. Somehow you did manage to raise the bar.
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, I will say I almost didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
I almost transferred in my sophomore year, plus I got very sick and had to drop out for a semester.
What kind of sick?
I developed Crohn's disease.
Ah, a nice, an emotionally based disease.
Yes, perfect,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh, there was nothing going on at all.
Oh,
sure.
No. Well, I can imagine. I mean, I'm sitting here imagining the internal conflict, literally the internal conflict of, I really want this, I'm supposed to have it, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
You know, why is this so hard?
Yeah. Plus, I'm stuck in a building of 200 cold, bitter people.
Right.
You know, in a place where the sun doesn't shine for 8 months of the year.
Yes, exactly.
So.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
So, okay, so your body essentially acted out the conflict.
Yes. We'll never know. I mean, you know, there's so
many
theories as to what...
I know. That's what I think. So.
You're probably right.
Right or wrong, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's just one of those diseases. It was.
Yes, right.
Know.
So are you okay?
Yeah, I've been in remission for God, years and years and years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was not easy, and it was...
No, it's horrible.
Oh, those first 2 years were, you know, you really do get to a point where you think, am I going to make it?
Yeah. No, it's true. It's not.
It's not.
So it seems to me it's kind of interesting. I mean, you had this, you sort of coasted in an ironic way until you were 17 or 18, and then you really got confronted with a pretty serious challenge that you were either going to rise to or not in terms of whether you were going to take responsibility for your life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it seems to me, and again, this wouldn't have been so hard for someone who had not had as much support, encouragement, cuddling as you did. So do you know how you did it? I mean, was there a conscious thing going on or was it just...
It brings up so many questions because I do believe that I got to college with this philosophy of this is costing a lot of money and I have to milk every bit of this that I possibly can.
Right.
So the other issue is to get to what many people were telling me is supposed to be the best 4 years of your life and approach it with this feeling of, you know, I will not have time for parties. I will not have time for a girlfriend. I mean, I was at Syracuse University. I never saw a football game in 4 years. You know, I mean, that sort of thing, that I was just so, you know, in the theater, in the dark room, all the time working, never took less than 18 credits, tried to double major at one point, which you really can't do with that major at Syracuse. And I think a lot of it was just burnout.
Yeah, you know, now you add another piece to the puzzle that I didn't hear before. A lot of coddled first children don't have that piece that you're describing now, which is, I am responsible to the people who love me and put me here.
Yeah.
That's another, I mean, a lot of youngest children with that kind of background would have said, well, screw this. You know, But you didn't, and that apparently was another part of the what was so hard.
I think so. But I will say, I left, I mean, I really only was there 3.5 years, and I think I got as much as one can get out of that program.
I believe you.
And that school. Of course, now you're sort of left with this, I look back at college and think, God, I wish I'd had a little more fun. You know, I wish I really...
yeah.
And being sick was, you know, sort of colored the whole thing.
I'm sure it did.
So,
okay, 3.5 years, you're out in the wide world.
Done.
Right. Where did you grow up?
New Jersey.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So did you go home?
I did. I absolutely went home. Took the first summer off, you know, went back, did a little community theater, and just started the audition thing. I mean, being from New Jersey, it wasn't so foreign. I still was not a huge fan of New York City at the time. I was kind of scared of it and thought it was kind of dirty and busy and stuff. And the idea of moving there was always kind of petrifying. In fact, when I first did move out, it was even just a Hoboken, New Jersey. We made it over the river, the first apartment. But I did what so many other, you know, recent grads were doing. I started the audition process, started doing children's theater. I did my first children's tour, 3 months out of college. I was on the road for about 2.5 months. and then came back and did summer stock. You know, I did my first like summer stock where you have to do everything yourself. You have to build the sets, and then I think at the end of the week we got $40. You know, but it was one of the best summers of my life.
Yeah,
I did seven shows, and it was a very reputable, cheap, non-equity summer stock. I mean, Judy Kuhn had gone there, and Taye Diggs, and all these great people. And,
well, and there's all that fellowship and camaraderie and part of this thing, you know.
Oh, completely. And it was in New London, New Hampshire, which is a gorgeous little town.
Yeah,
oh, my
God.
So, yeah, that was a blast. But that was another one. It was the next level of what's expected of you as an actor. And,
right.
Oh, my God. You know, this is like, we didn't have a day off.
No.
You know, when you're non-equity, it's like...
No, but again... You were doing what you were supposed to do. This was the next rung on the ladder.
It made complete sense, and I was absolutely...
Grateful to do it.
Oh, thrilled.
Absolutely.
It was in my element, you know.
Yeah.
So happy, yeah.
So, then?
So then more little stuff like that. Just a little more children's theater and some small regional stuff. I did, within a couple of years, I'd done my first national tour of Annie.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a blast, but again, you know, I was always looking for the next level, you know. So whereas the people on the tour with that show for a year and a half, I was thinking to myself, you know, to be the dog catcher in Annie. it's a nice career thing, but I lasted about 3 months before I left, much to their protesting, and it ended up being a good career choice because I got a new agent. I booked a show in Atlantic City and made a lifelong friend there. That was a two-person show, and I was a rock star in Atlantic City for 3 months. Went from there and did a show in Westchester where I got my equity card at 24, I believe. Which at the time I thought was really, really great.
But it was.
Then, well, I had a lot of people telling me, you know, don't rush to this. You know, you really want to build a substantial resume before you... You know, and I said, well, no, I'm a professional actor. You know, it's time to...
I'm 24.
I'm 24 years old.
Yeah.
And that was a big eye-opener for me as well, because you went from waiting in line outside of a door of people and thinking, in the audition room, thinking, I belong here, and I'm better than a lot of these people, to standing outside of the door in the line and looking at the person in front of you and saying, I just saw you on Broadway last night, and you are way better than me.
Yeah, right.
What am I doing here?
Right.
And I think that was reflected in what happened next, which is that I did not work for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Dabbled in a little bit of, you know, commercials, TV, and stuff like that. You know, I got some stuff on Law & Order and did a national commercial and whatnot. But as far as legit theatrical work, I would say 2 years that
wow.
I was just...
Did you continue to study?
I did continue to study. I was taking acting classes and voice lessons. Switched voice teachers, you know, and that's when you start to doubt everything, and it's like, what am I doing wrong, and why isn't this working, and...
Right. So in retrospect, you can see it, though, right?
You definitely can see it, yeah. I knew what was wrong.
But you can't make yourself older than you are, or give yourself more experience until
you
have it.
Yeah, and I think I think in hindsight, it was... something that needed to happen. I wanted to be the kind of actor to be able to sit here and say to people, there was a time when I did not work.
Yes. And you did.
I know what that's like. You know, when I got the waitering job, I finally broke down and said, fine, let me strap on an apron and let's do this. You know, let me see what the cliche is all about.
Right.
I really, really wanted, I didn't want to breeze past that. I wanted to, you know, to be an actor that had a strong foundation of this life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I've always been that kind of person. It's like, you know, if you go to the carnival, I want to go on every ride. I want to see what this is all about.
Well, it's what you did in college, too.
Yeah, completely.
Right.
I want the most of the experience that I can get.
It's real interesting because it's anathema to that coddled baby boy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's real interesting that they managed to give you both of those. And I'm not exactly sure. You haven't said how... Do you see your parents as particularly hardworking?
Incredibly hardworking.
Yeah, so then that's what it is. You modeled that.
Because
it's an interesting... I mean, those things do not necessarily go together. I mean, I suppose you know that.
Oh, sure. Being the...
Right.
You know, the one that skates by through life.
Right. Is generally a person who skates by through life, and when they hit the hard thing, they stop because they can't... Right. And that's clearly not true of you.
Well, I think it depends. I mean, my sisters and my brother look at me like that. You know, I'm the guy that...
They think you skated?
Well, I think they think in some respects, I still skate. I mean, look at the situation I'm in now. I mean, some people look at this kind of job and they think, well, you have the day off to enjoy the beaches of Sarasota, and then at night you work for 2-3 hours, and
this
then
is the,
you go
this
have a glass
the,
of wine.
Please. This is what people think about people in the arts.
Yeah.
They think that they play. They think it's not serious. They think they don't work hard. But it's bullshit. So,
well, and if you understood what those 2 or 3 hours were about every night, or if you understood
and the 2 years
process
that you didn't work when you worked as a waiter trying to get this together. Yeah, right, never mind.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah.
So, okay. So then at some point, I guess you started to work.
Yeah. And it was exactly that. I mean, it wasn't like all of a sudden it stopped. I mean, it slowly crept in.
Mm-hmm.
It was very frustrating. I actually booked one job and then... was so thrilled. I can remember sitting in Times Square and I went and bought myself a beer at the W Hotel and sat there and said, oh my God, the dry spell is over. And within 2 hours I'd gotten a phone call from the casting director saying, we actually have to take back the offer. We don't have enough equity contracts to give it to you. And then it was another 4 months before I booked an off-Broadway thing. And then that, thank God, I think just had the energy to snowball into something else. And then, you know, it's been at least a job or two a year since then, and that's, you know, knock on wood.
You're not kidding.
And that's been great. And that's when you can sort of sit back and be...
And you can say, I have a career.
Yeah, and I've got a resume now.
Right.
And even if there is another dry spell, I know that it won't be permanent, or I hope that it won't be permanent.
No, because you know you can do it.
Yeah, and you have the skills now, and you have the contacts that you can always, you know... I mean, I did 3 productions of Grease in 1 year. And everybody was, oh, you're going to be the Grease guy, you know. And the big kick in the teeth came when they said, oh, and now we're going to revive Grease and bring it back to Broadway.
And it's not you.
And it's not, not only that, to get the role you've been playing, you have to do a reality TV show, you know, which I can't stand. So it was sort of this, I think my time with Grease is done.
Right.
And how will I work again, you know, since I'm so this type now? And you do, you have to... You go, okay, well, then there must be another show that fits, and you find that one, and you reinvent yourself
a little
bit.
You have to reinvent yourself, right.
Yeah,
right.
It really is true, what they say. And this, I mean, just, this gig that I'm doing right now with I Love You Perfect, I mean, this is, I've really had to, you dip into parts of yourself that you haven't used in a while, and you, you know, flex muscles that you weren't sure if you were going to flex again. And it's not, again, it's not at all, this is, you know, at least for me, most of the time it's not, you know, oh, what do I want to do next? You know, what do I think is the, you know, it's I have to do this.
Right.
Or I will be...
out of work.
Back to waiting tables.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, I also teach, and thankfully that's been my main source of income for a long time now, and been very lucky, and I love it. But yeah, it is the profession sort of steers you a lot of the times.
Yeah, it does.
You know.
I want to ask you if there was something I didn't ask you that I should have asked you.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, you don't have to come up with anything, but if something occurred to you that you wanted to say about this.
Huh. Do you mean about the art form or the life or...
Well, I have one last question, and I'll ask it. And
sure.
In the meanwhile, if you think of something else you want to tell me, please.
Absolutely.
I always ask, and in your case, you really have given virtually your entire life to this. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you want to say about what it feels like to have given a life to being an actor, trying to be an actor, trying to work as an actor?
I will say it's a sacrifice. I think it's a huge sacrifice. I hear a lot of stories about actors saying, this is absolutely the only thing that I could do, and if I did anything else, I would die. And I think there was a time when I felt the same way, but I think as I've gotten older, you start to come to grips with reality a little more and think, you know, there are other things that I could do, that I would not die. Would I be as happy? Probably not. But everything's a trade-off in life, and, you know, I could be my brother. I could go work in computers, and then I would have a house and a wife and a kid, and there'd be really great things about that too. I mean, if he wants to jet off and go skiing, you know, in Colorado, he can this winter, and I can't. So it definitely is a sacrifice. On the other hand, I get to do things and meet people and see places and sites that not a lot of other people get to in their life. So I think for people considering it, know that it's not a magical, wonderful thing necessarily. It's just a different thing, and it has its good sides and its bad sides. And I would say, you just know. You just sort of know if you're supposed to be doing it. And be very clear about the reasons why you want to do it. I had a very dear friend in high school who used to do plays with me, and she used to drag me into New York to go to auditions. And I remember at the time her talking about how she wanted to be an actress because she wanted to be famous, because she wanted to get that attention, she wanted to date this movie star or whatever. And I just remember thinking, you have no idea. I mean, I was 16 and I knew more than her at this point. That it's you know, if that happens, wonderful, great, you know, what have you. But at the root, it's not about that. And I never wanted it to be about that. I never wanted to be that actor that, you know, that, God, I never wanted to be the Megan Fox of the industry that's like, okay, I'm hot and I want to be famous, so it just happened. You know, I always wanted to have colleagues and peers look at me and say, this person belongs here, and I want to work with them, and I want to create great art. And if I make $1 billion in the process, God bless. You know, that would be great. But first and foremost, I think the best actors are the ones that give a damn about the art.
I want to thank you for all of that, because the theme of the Lin Show is essentially that most people are in denial for aspects of themselves. They're living lives that don't use all of who they really are. And the reason that I interview people who make their living or their life within art is because mostly they are people who are doing just what they have to do. They are being just who they really are. And when somebody listens to you, it's glaringly clear that that is true, you know, and you make the point for me, so thank you so much, you know. It's what therapists call congruence. That is, you know, how I act is what I am. You know, there's not a disconnect between who I'm presenting myself as and who I am.
Yeah.
You know, and that's very clear for you. It's very clear that's what we see is what you, what we, you know, what we get is what you are. And
No, I wholeheartedly agree. Which is not to say that you can't do multiple things.
No.
I mean, I believe I'm almost as much a teacher as I am an actor, and I love that. And I think, you know, I have a student in my adult acting class who's 82 years old, and he is about to be a published playwright, and he started at 80 deciding he wanted to write plays through, I think, the program here at FST. So I really do believe if it's in you, you should do it. You know, does that mean that you have to, you know, sell your entire life and move to New York City and start? Not necessarily. But if it's in you, you should do it. I think you owe it to yourself.
Yeah, and I really think that you're making the point, and that is that a person can know. A lot of people don't. A lot of people don't. A lot of people have what your friend had, which is, this is what I have to be in order to be all right, as opposed to, this is who I am.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
You know, and my own feeling about that, and I think that you were alluding to that, is that if you're chasing something that's not who you really are, even if you get it, it's not going to feel so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So I just want to say to anybody who is near Sarasota or can get on a plane to come on down and see Gil. He is very, very worth seeing.
Thank you.
And I really want to thank you so much.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, there you have it. Yet another example of someone who is who he is. And that's Gil Brady. I'm happy to say that I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change has been extended an additional week. So if you haven't gotten there yet, buy your tickets now. They're going fast. You've heard Sharon's review, which confirms for you what I am telling you and what Gil told you. It's a delightful, delightful show. And we're going to go out of this show playing one of the songs from I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change. It's called I Can Live With That. It's the last song of the show, and it's the love affair of the not quite so young anymore. It's just adorable, like the show. Also, I hope that if you go up on my website, you will be able to hear some other songs from the show and also see some photographs, or at least one photograph of the cast. So if that's of interest to you, go up on the website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow.com. And before I play I Can Live With That, I need to thank, as I always do, the indomitable Josh Hackney, who knows how to do everything there is to do with computers, with electronics, with sound, with recording, with the internet, and has been the backstop for me for the entire time that I'm doing this show, and will be the backstop for you if you need any of this kind of technical assistance. You can get to Josh by going up on my website, thelynnshow.com, and saying, I want Josh. And as I always say, in case I didn't get around to saying it in this show, you can also hear the podcasts of my old shows. You can find out about me. You can contact me about therapy. Well, there's all kinds of things you can do on my website. And as always, I hope that you heard something today that you can use. Something that interested you, something that you didn't know, something you did know but that you'd forgotten, something that's compelling. Because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I hope you will be too. And now, from the cast album of I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change, I Can Live With That.
Arthur, you seem like a nice man. You do. But I don't really go out like you're intending. I just don't. I've got some problems. My health's not good.
Well, at our age, that's understood.
I've got arthritis.
Flares up in June.
I've got bronchitis.
I'll get that soon. No matter. I can live with that.
I've had a bypass.
Well, I've had two.
I dye my hair.
It looks nice blue.
My ways are set.
Well, people change. I find you sexy.
I find you strange.
No matter, I can live with that. I often think of those I miss.
Friends keep dying, but I've grown strong.
Sometimes I have to reminisce.
It still does hurt, just not as long. My kids don't visit.
Mine never leave.
I make a meatloaf you won't believe.
I tell tall tales.
I tell the truth.
I drink skim milk.
I drink vermouth.
No matter, I can live with that.
I like things clean. I scrub the wash.
I got a garden. I grow some squash.
I keep in shape. I mow the lawn.
I wake up late.
I'm up at dawn.
No matter, I can live with that.
Arthur, there's something I have to tell you. When it comes to, you know, I'm not the type of person that just jumps into bed like an acrobat. It takes time with me.
Uh-oh.
That's a problem.
It depends. How much time you talking? Because if you're talking years, I don't think either of us has that long.
I was talking a few weeks, maybe.
No matter, I can live with that.
I will be buried at my gym's right.
Next to my Sue is my grave site. But I'm still here with much to give. Someday I'll die.
For now I'll live. I'll always love my gym.
And I, my Sue.
I just don't know.
You think I do.
No matter,
I can live with.
I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray, always in my face and figure I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. Singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going. On singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy. still got some tang, so you won't hear me simper. I may have got good.